the Kaplan opportunity was one where I got excited by the idea of helping universities and employers build new innovative programs and strategies. And so the transition was I was doing a lot of high level research and light consulting. Now I'm in a role where we've got access to a broad set of capabilities, global capabilities at Kaplan, where we can actually help build real programs for real universities and their leaders who are trying to go in innovative ways. So basically it's getting back into the game of helping build real programs in support of students.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast. Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner.
Hey.
Welcome, Brad.
Thanks,
hey.
Tiffany. Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Again.
Again and again. We're actually coming up on our 100th episode. We're excited to be able to release that and for what we have in store for you. So be sure to join us for that 100th episode.
And I might give a little tip to the audience. Tiffany has agreed to sing some of her favorite show tunes on that 100th episode. So you'll be sure to want to tune in for that.
What's that website you use, Fiverr? I'll be paying somebody to record some of those favorite show tunes and we'll play them. All right. No, but to get serious, today we are joined by a guest that we're so excited to have on board with us, and that is Brandon Bastide.
Brandon Bastide leads Kaplan's work serving U.S. colleges and universities, leveraging the organization's highly diversified global educational offerings and insights. His mission is to help U.S. higher education adapt, grow, and thrive. Prior to Kaplan, Bastide was global head of public sector at Gallup, serving higher education, government, and foundations. In that role, Bastide led dozens of groundbreaking studies and consulted with hundreds of higher ed leaders. He remains a Gallup senior advisor. An internationally known speaker and author on education and workforce development, Bastide has published more than 100 articles and keynoted more than 200 conferences. He was named a LinkedIn Top Voice in Education for 2018. Brandon received his bachelor's degree in public policy from Duke University and an honorary doctorate from Augustana College. He is a trustee emeritus of Duke and has served on the board of visitors of the Sanford School of Public Policy. Please join us in welcoming to the Digital to Learn podcast, Brandon Bastide. Welcome, Brandon.
Oh, it's good to be with you, and congrats on your almost 100th show. Very cool.
Thank you. We always open the show with some getting to know you questions, and I cheat almost every time by doing a little bit of digging on our guest. And one of the things I noticed about Brandon on his LinkedIn page was that during COVID, he was commenting a bit on not getting to travel as much. So I know that there at least were a lot of flights in his past, if not his present. We are wondering, Brandon, how would family or friends describe your travel habits, whether that's how spontaneous you are, how orderly, early, late? What's it like to travel with you?
Yeah, I mean, not much spontaneity in terms of fun travel. Usually that's planned well in advance. But, you know, pre-COVID, lots of flights. I probably averaged about 175 flight segments a year. And a lot of those were day trips and one-nighters and, you know, in and out kind of things, conferences, visits to universities, but always on time or early. I've got the travel down to a science, the packing, the unpacking, the TSA process. It's a well-oiled machine from that perspective, but I'm out of practice other than a flight for a family vacation earlier this year. I've had one business trip in the last 500 plus days. So who knows what it'll be like when I fully reemerge here.
What do you do to pass time on the plane? Headphones, laptop?
You know, back in the day, pre-Wi-Fi, I would always read books, and that's where I read all of my books. I used to read a lot. I read some now, but the Wi-Fi in planes has killed that. So the answer is nowadays, it's usually email and catching up on work on the flights, or it's a good old nap.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, as you heard from Brandon's bio, this is a guy with many talents. Mm-hmm. But we suspect that there might be some hidden talents that few people know about. What might those be, Brandon?
Man, I'm not sure there's much in the way of hidden talents. I mean, I many moons ago was a college athlete. You know, I ran track and cross country at Duke University. So there used to be some running talent in there, but that's long since passed me. And now I'm living vicariously through my kids who are involved in all kinds of sports. So I'm pretty much a full-time dad and cheerleader and support unit to my 12-year-old daughter and my 10-year-old son. But otherwise, no real hobbies of note. I don't have any special woodcrafting talents, although I wish I did. Just used to be a runner back in the day.
Do you still run recreationally or just for?
Not much. You know, I've gotten into road biking, rowing, got into CrossFit for a while until I started hurting myself quite a bit. So, you know, it's a mishmash of different activities these days, but nothing involving regular running. So
did your children pick up the running bug or different sports?
Well, it's TBD. You know, they haven't really started any kind of track or cross country programs because they're late elementary, early middle school. I mean, son's involved in football and basketball. They're both swimming, et cetera. Just had my daughter at a basketball tournament in Ocean City, Maryland this past weekend. But funny story, you know, they're starting in a new school this fall. And during the tour, they were talking about the new track coach they had. And they said, yeah, I think he used to run at either Princeton or Duke. And my wife asked, you know, well, who is it? Do you know their name? And so they said the name. She texted me and was like, do you know this guy named Brendan Fitzgibbon? And I said, yeah, he used to be my teammate at Duke. So
a lot of things,
my kids will be in track and they're going to be coached by one of my former teammates from the Duke track team, which to talk about a small world. He's just moving here to the Vienna, Virginia area from San Francisco. So I mean, it just totally small world coincidence.
Oh, that's excellent.
You know, you're going to get roped into this, right?
Yeah. In fact, I just talked to him Friday and said, hey, like, welcome to town. And he said, well, I need an assistant. I
was like, oh, yeah.
Well, we'll see. He's still got to give me a pitch. I need to know how much the volunteer fee is, you know, zero or zero before I decide.
Yep. That's right.
Oh, that's great. What a great story.
Yeah.
All right. What about your first internship or job?
Well, I mean, technically speaking, first job was a paper route when I was in sixth grade. And then from there, I was actually a cashier at Ponderosa Steakhouse. So I did that in high school. My first internship, though, was my summer after college. Interned for our state senator in her office, just handling constituent phone calls and mail, primarily mail, because email wasn't a real dominant mode back then. But that was a great way to start. You know, I mean, they let me handle pretty much all the comms and great way to learn what's going on and how to respond to people. And so anyway, that was technically my first internship.
So if we would like cite some Ponderosa meals, could you tell us how much change we'll get from a $20 bill?
Well, I'll just say the funny story is they had a petite sirloin on the menu back then. And I remember my boss said, if you sell 10 of these tonight, I'll give you a 5 cent an hour raise. So I went hog wild pitching the petite sirloin. But the sad part is most people who came up to order called it the petit sirloin. And I'm like, I'm not sure you want to pet it. You just want to eat it. But, I didn't actually say that to anybody. I didn't correct them, but I did end up selling 12 that night. So I got my 5 cent an hour raise from, I think, 4.45 to 4.50 an hour. So
excellent. Wow. Very good.
Hey, I've been at Subway with a friend who said, I'll take the herbs and cheese bread, please. And you think, man, I love you, friend, but I'm going to have to find a way to break it to you gently.
Yeah, I'm guilty of mispronouncing a lot of words. Like I always thought it was Hermes, not Hermes. So you know, I'm right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's get serious.
Yeah.
So Brandon, tell us a little about your journey and career path to what you're doing now at Kaplan.
The condensed story is I started an online education company shortly after I graduated from college as an undergrad called Outside the Classroom. And this was in 2000. So the very, very early days of, you know, what wasn't even called the ed tech industry back then, year after Blackboard was founded and, you know, really on the front edge of this. But it was a company that did online alcohol abuse prevention, sexual assault prevention courses for college freshmen, almost like, you know, mandatory education because it was such an important issue. And built that organization over about 11 years. It was acquired by EverFi, one of the big ed tech companies in DC. And then I spent about 7 years at Gallup as the executive director of education and workforce development. And now I've been at Kaplan for almost 3 years now, leading all of our university partnerships and employer partnerships with organizations around the globe.
So as a recent college graduate, what was the thought process that led you to think, hey, I think I'll create an online venue for all of these resources when at that time there weren't many?
Yeah, I mean, the backdrop, you know, some folks may remember kind of the news like around 97, 98, there were a lot of alcohol-related deaths that ended up resulting in significant lawsuits. I mean, so there was the famous Harvard School of Public Health binge drinking study that kind of put that issue foremost in the press and on people's minds. And then the backdrop of some of the litigation that was happening with universities when they were found liable for certain alcohol-related deaths. And so I was a student leader at the time. I was class president trying to kind of wade through this issue from a student perspective on campus in terms of, you know, giving students alternatives to alcohol-fueled parties and then also treating them as adults in this process, right? The typical just ban kegs and kick fraternities off campus wasn't exactly the most direct route to kind of helping solve the problem. So all that kind of combined with the early advent of online education. And so the early instinct was, hey, if you can do a science-based, non-opinionated educational intervention, it's not going to solve the problem for everybody. But the idea I had in my head was to develop a population level educational offering that on whole reduced the probability that students were drinking to excess. They were able to identify warning signs and others. They understood things like blood alcohol content, et cetera. So it was just a number of things that came together. But I mean, it was through the lens of a student leader that I was thinking about that solution and then thinking about how to scale it, how to have a university show reasonable best efforts with respect to preventing some of these issues. And so it was kind of a blend between what the universities needed to accomplish and what students needed, which was to be, frankly, treated like adults and given better information to help themselves and help others.
That's a great story. Amazing.
So we know you were at Gallup for a period of time, but what drew you then to make that transition to Kaplan?
Yeah, I mean, look, I really feel blessed. I've had an incredible career between, you know, being a founder and CEO and building that, being able to work at a place like Gallup where I loved the research that we were involved in, the broad view that I was able to have across all the work that we were doing, light consulting, but not heavy consulting like a McKinsey or whatever. So it was just, it was a fire hose of fascinating insights. The Kaplan opportunity was one where I got excited by the idea of helping universities and employers build new innovative programs and strategies. And so the transition was I was doing a lot of high level research and light consulting. Now I'm in a role where we've got access to a broad set of capabilities, global capabilities at Kaplan, where we can actually help build real programs, support real universities and their leaders who are trying to go in innovative ways. So basically it's getting back into the game of helping build real programs in support of students. And so that was probably the only part that was missing from the excitement that I was involved in at Gallup. So it's great to be kind of on the ground again, working on building real programs with leaders. So that was the big transition, but it's a highly diversified organization involved in so many different things. So there's still a very steep learning curve and lots of insights that are coming in a different fashion. So I'm still scratching that, the insights, ideas, energy itch, which was the big part of the fun of being at Gallup as well.
We've had lots of guests who have lamented the slow pace of change in higher education. And you were espousing innovation and change. What's your perspective on higher ed across the board in terms of how willing and capable are people to really embrace new things and do them?
It's a simple answer. It depends, right? Which may not be a surprise. You know, higher ed in general has been criticized for being slower moving on some of these things. There's a lot of sacred cows that higher education holds on to that, quite frankly, I see kind of being killed off as a result of the pandemic and the need for more transformation, given all the threats that are in front of higher ed. So it really comes down to, the choice I've made is just a simple one. I want to work with the most innovative leaders in higher ed. And it's not always by institution, right? Like people ask me all the time, what kinds of colleges or universities do you work with? And there is no answer to that, right? It's not just large or just public or just private or just prestigious. It's mainly the dynamism of the president, his or her senior leadership team, the degree with which they're aligned with their board of trustees. Is this an institution that wants to adapt and innovate and grow? If that's the case, and there's a lot of telltale signs to determine that, those are the institutions I want to work with. In other words, I'm choosing to work with people, not necessarily an institutional typology. And so from that perspective, I feel like I'm working with all innovators because I've kind of chosen, and Kaplan has chosen to work with those. There are lots of institutions that aren't innovating, right? That aren't changing fast enough. And the thing that I see that I worry most about is that there's most institutions are making small, subtle changes. And I don't think that's going to get them there, right? If they're worried about a lot of the threats to higher ed right now or their institution specifically, this is not the time for small plotting progress, right? This is not the time for pilot tests and let's just see where it goes with 30 students. I mean, you've got to make some real bets here and move aggressively towards the future. You know, anyway, in my world, I'm working with people who are innovative. They're getting things done. They're getting the support of their accreditors. They're getting the support of their faculty because they're doing it in ways where they embrace everybody at the table in the process. I'm having a lot of fun from that perspective.
It sounds like it.
Can you give an example of any of the larger scale innovations that you've seen or been a part of that don't represent those small efforts, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'll just highlight a couple that we've been involved with. I mean, we're working with Wake Forest, for example, across a whole bunch of different levels. And one of the things that we did with them, they're well known for their career services innovation. Andy Chan, who leads that, well-known leader across higher ed. And we got involved. I've known Andy for well over a decade. He and I are always just kind of ideating, right, about the future of higher ed, the future of career services. And as we were thinking about a lot of what Wake accomplished, we both were like, geez, we could create something where we build a shared services type of offering around career service functions that aren't being met at an individual university level. If we were to create that together, it could be a real contribution to the field. And so we spent 2 years thinking through what that was, what that could be, and just about 6 months ago launched a service that's being built by Kaplan, but designed with Wake Forest and by Andy Chan and his team. And it's a shared services model for multiple universities to plug into. And I won't go into great detail, but one of the big pieces is it's going to give students at these individual universities access to industry and role-specific experts, as opposed to the general advisors that they have access to through their own career center. No individual university is going to hire 40 or 50 industry or role-specific advisors. But if you build that as a shared services platform, it becomes invaluable as an extension of a university's kind of core career service office. So I put that out there because it's an innovative partnership between Kaplan and Wake Forest. And I think it's a thoughtful example of the kinds of new models that are out there. If universities start to think about, hey, we don't need to do all this on our own, right? Can we work together? Can we partner in various ways? So kind of fits a number of interesting angles as you think about the potential for the future.
Thank you for joining us today for the Digital to Learn podcast. We're going to be back again with Brandon next week. So please tune in and you can refer to our website, www.digitaltolearn.com for additional resources.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are 3 things we ask you to do. 1, come back and join us again. 2, tell your friends about us. And 3, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.